I don't care if she does. I don't, I said, but the words came out as a sob. Mal released me so suddenly that I almost fell backward. He paced away from me, shoving his hands through his hair. The movement made him wince. His fingers tested the flesh at his side. I wanted to yell at him to go find a healer. I wanted to smash my fist into the break and make it hurt worse. Saints, he swore. I wish we'd never come here. Then let's leave, I said wildly. I knew I wasn't making any sense, but I didn't much care. Let's run away tonight and forget we ever saw this place. He let out a bitter bark of laughter. Do you know how much I want that? To be with you without rank or walls or anything between us. Just to be common again together. He shook his head. But you won't do it, Alina. I will, I said, tears spilling over my cheeks. Don't kid yourself. You'd just find a way back. I don't know how to fix this, I said desperately. You can't fix it, he shouted. This is the way it is. Did it ever occur to you that maybe you were meant to be a queen and I'm not meant to be anything at all? That isn't true. He stalked toward me, the boughs of the trees making strange shifting shadows across his face in the twilight. I'm not a soldier anymore, he said. I'm not a prince, and I'm sure as hell not a saint. So what am I, Alina? What am I? He whispered. He was close to me now. The scent I knew so well, that dark green scent of the meadow, was lost beneath the smell of sweat and blood. Am I your guardian? He asked. He ran his hand slowly down my arm, from shoulder to fingertips. Your friend? His left hand skimmed down my other arm. Your servant? I could feel his breath on my lips. My heart thundered in my ears. Tell me what I am. He pulled me against his body, his hand circling my wrist. When his fingers closed, a sharp jolt rocked through me, buckling my knees. The world tilted, and I gasped. Mal dropped my hand as if he'd been burned. He backed away from me, stunned. What was that? I tried to blink away the dizziness. What the hell was that? He said again. I don't know. My fingers still tingled. A humorless smile twisted his lips. It's never easy with us, is it? I shoved to my feet, suddenly angry. No, Mal, it isn't. It's never going to be easy or sweet or comfortable with me. I can't just leave the little palace. I can't run away or pretend that this isn't who I am. Because if I do, more people will die. I can't ever just be Alina again. That girl is gone. I want her back, he said roughly. I can't go back, I screamed, not caring who heard me. Even if you take away this collar and the sea-whip scales, you can't carve this power out of me. And what if I could? Would you let it go? Would you give it up? Never. The truth of that word hung between us. We stood there, in the darkness of the woods, and I felt the shard in my heart shift. I knew what it would leave behind when the pain was gone. Loneliness, nothingness. A deep fissure that would not mend. The desperate edge of the abyss I had once glimpsed in the darkling's eyes. Let's go, Mal said at last. Where? Back to the little palace. I'm not going to just leave you in the woods. We walked up the hill in silence and entered the palace through the darkling's chambers. The common room was blessedly empty. At the door to my room, I turned to Mal. I see him, I said. I see the darkling. In the library, in the chapel. That time on the fold when the hummingbird nearly crashed. In my room, the night you tried to kiss me. He stared at me. I don't know if they're visions or visitations. I didn't tell you because I think I might be going mad, and because I think you're already a little afraid of me. Mal opened his mouth, closed it, tried again. Even then I hoped he might deny it. Instead, he turned his back on me. He crossed the guards' quarters, stopping only to snatch a bottle of kvass from the table, and softly shut the door behind him. I got ready for bed and eased between the sheets, but the night was too warm. I kicked them into a tangle at my feet. I lay on my back, gazing up at the obsidian dome marked by constellations. I wanted to bang on Mal's door, tell him I was sorry, that I'd made a terrible mess of things, that we should have marched into Os Alta that first day, hand in hand. But would it have mattered in the end? There is no ordinary life for people like you and me. No ordinary life. Just battle and fear and mysterious crackling jolts that rocked us back on our heels. I'd spent so many years wishing to be the kind of girl that Mal could want. Maybe that wasn't possible anymore. There are no others like us, Alina. And there never will be. When the tears came, they burned hot and angry. I turned my face into my pillow so that no one would hear me cry. I wept, and when there was nothing left, I fell into a troubled sleep. Alina. I woke to the soft brush of Mal's lips on mine. The barris touched my temple, my eyelids, my brow. The light from the guttering flame on my bedside table glinted off his brown hair as he bent to kiss the curve of my throat. For a moment, I hesitated, confused, not quite awake. Then I wrapped my arms around him and pulled him closer. I didn't care that we'd fought, that he'd kissed Zoya, that he'd walked away from me, that everything felt so impossible. The only thing that mattered was that he'd changed his mind. He'd come back, and I wasn't alone. "I missed you, Mal," I murmured against his ear. "I missed you so much." My arms glided up his back and twined around his neck. He kissed me again, and I sighed into the welcome press of his mouth. I felt his weight slide over me and ran my hands over the hard muscles of his arms. If Mal was still with me, if he could still love me, then there was hope. My heart was pounding in my chest as warmth spread through me. There was no sound but our breathing and the shift of our bodies together. He was kissing my throat, my collarbone, drinking my skin. I shivered and pressed closer to him. This was what I wanted, wasn't it? To find some way to heal the breach between us? Still, a sliver of panic cut through me. I needed to see his face, to know we were all right. I cupped his head with my hands, tilting his chin, and as my gaze met his, I shrank back in terror. I looked into Mal's eyes, his familiar blue eyes that I knew even better than my own, except they weren't blue. In the dying lamplight, they glimmered quartz gray. He smiled then, a cold, clever smile like none I'd ever seen on his lips. "I missed you too, Alina." That voice, cool and smooth as glass. Mal's features melted into shadow and then formed again like a face from the mist. Pale, beautiful, that thick shock of black hair, the perfect sweep of jaw. The darkling rested one gentle hand on my cheek. "Soon," he whispered. I screamed. He broke into shadows and vanished. I scrambled out of bed, clutching my arms around myself. My skin was crawling, my body quaking with terror and the memory of desire. I expected Tamar or Tolia to come bursting through the door. Already I had a lie on my lips. "Nightmare," I would say, and the word would come out steady, convincing, despite the rattling of my heart in my chest and the new scream I felt building in my throat. But the room stayed silent. No one came, I stood shaking in the near dark. I took a shallow, trembling breath, then another. When my legs felt steady enough, I pulled on my robe and peeked into the common room. It was empty. I closed my door and pressed my back against it, staring at the rumpled covers of the bed. I was not going back to sleep. I might never sleep again. I glanced at the clock on the mantel. Sunrise came early during Balia Notch, but it would be hours before the palace woke. I dug through the pile of clothes that I'd kept from our journey on the Volquilni, and pulled out a drab brown coat and a long scarf. It was too hot for either, but I didn't care. I drew the coat on over my night shift, wrapped the scarf around my head and neck, and tugged on my shoes. As I crept through the common room, I saw the door to the guards' quarters was closed. If Mal or the twins were inside, they must be sleeping deeply. Or maybe Mal was somewhere else beneath the domes of the little palace, tangled in Zoya's arms. My heart gave a sick twist. I took the doors to the left and hurried through the darkened halls, into the silent grounds. Chapter 21 I drifted through the half-light, past the silent lawns covered in mist, the clouded windows of the greenhouse. The only sound was the soft crunch of my shoes on the gravel path. The morning deliveries of bread and produce were being made at the Grand Palace, and I followed the caravan of wagons, straight out the gates, and through the cobblestone streets of the upper town. There were still a few revelers about, enjoying the twilight. I saw two people in party dress, snoozing on a park bench. A group of girls laughed and splashed in a fountain, their skirts hiked up to their knees. A man wearing a wreath of poppies sat on a curb with his head in his hands while a girl in a paper crown patted his shoulder. I passed them all unseen and unremarked upon, an invisible girl in a drab brown coat. I knew I was being foolish. The apparat spies might be watching, or the darklings. I might be seized and hauled away at any moment. I wasn't sure if it mattered to me anymore. I needed to keep walking, to fill my lungs with clean air, to shake the feeling of the darkling's hands on my skin. I touched the scar at my shoulder. Even through the fabric of my coat, I could feel its raised edges. Aboard the whaler, I'd asked the darkling why he'd let his monster bite me. I thought it was out of spite, so I would always wear his mark. Maybe there had been more to it than that. Had the vision been real? Was he there? Or was he something my mind had conjured? What sickness was inside of me that I would dream such a thing? But I didn't want to think. I just wanted to walk. I crossed the canal, the little boats bobbing in the water below. From somewhere beneath the bridge, I heard the wheeze of an accordion. I floated past the guard gate and into the narrow streets and clutter of the market town. It seemed even more crowded than it had before. People hung off stoops and overflowed from porches. Some played cards on makeshift tables made of boxes. Others slept propped up against each other. A couple swayed slowly on a tavern porch to music only they could hear. When I came to the city walls, I told myself to stop, to turn around and go home. I almost laughed. The little palace wasn't really home. There is no ordinary life for people like you and me. My life would be allegiance instead of love, fealty instead of friendship. I would weigh each decision, consider every action, trust no one. It would be life observed from a distance. I knew I should go back, but I kept on. And a moment later, I was on the other side of the wall. Just like that, I'd left Os Alta. The tent city had grown. There were hundreds of people camped outside the walls, maybe thousands. The pilgrims weren't hard to find. I was surprised to see how their numbers had increased. They crowded near a large white tent, all facing east, awaiting the early sunrise. The sound began as a swell of rustling whispers that fluttered on the air like the wings of birds, and grew to a low hum as the sun peered over the horizon and lit the sky pale blue. Only then did I begin to make out the words. Sancta, Sancta Alina, Sancta, Sancta Alina. The pilgrims watched the growing dawn, and I watched them, unable to look away from their hope, their expectation. Their faces were exultant, and as the first rays of sun broke over them, some began to weep. The hum rose and multiplied, cresting and falling, building to a wail that raised the hair on my arms. It was a creek overflowing its banks, a hive of bees shaken from a tree. Sancta, Sancta Alina, daughter of Ravka. I closed my eyes as the sun played over my skin, praying I would feel something, anything. Sancta Alina, daughter of Keremzin. Their hands lifted heavenward. Their voices rose to a frenzy, shouting now, crying out. Old faces, young ones, the sick and the frail, the healthy and the strong, strangers every one. I looked around me. This isn't hope, I thought. It's madness. It's hunger, need, desperation. I felt as if I were waking from a trance. Why had I come here? I was more alone among these people than behind the palace walls. They had nothing to give me, and I had nothing to offer them. My feet ached, and I realized just how tired I was. I turned and began pushing my way back through the crowd toward the city gates, as the chanting reached a roaring clamor. Sancta, they shouted, Sol Korolyeva, Rebe Dvastalba. Daughter of two mills. I'd heard that before, on the journey to Old Alta, a valley named after some ancient ruin. Home to a sprawl of tiny, unimportant settlements on the southern border. Mal had been born near there, too. But we'd never had a chance to go back. And what would have been the point? Any bit of family we might have had was long buried or burned. Sancta Alina. I thought again of my few memories from before Keremzin, of the dish of sliced beets, my fingers stained red with them. I remembered the dusty road, seen from someone's broad shoulders. The sway of oxtails, our shadows on the ground. A hand pointing out the ruins of the mills, two narrow fingers of a rock, worn down to bare spindles by wind, rain, and time. That was all that remained in my memory. The rest was Keremzin. The rest was Mal. Sancta Alina. I shoved my way through the mass of bodies, pulling my scarf tighter around my ears to try to block out the noise. An old pilgrim woman stepped into my path, and I nearly knocked her over. I reached out to steady her, and she latched onto me, barely keeping her balance. Forgive me, Babya, I said formally. Never let it be said that Anacuya hadn't taught us manners. I gently set the woman back on her feet. Are you all right? But she wasn't looking at my face. She was staring at my throat. My hand flew up to my neck. It was too late. The scarf had slipped free. Sancta, the woman moaned. Sancta! She fell to her knees and seized my hand, pressing it to her wrinkled cheek. Sancta Alina! Suddenly there were hands all around me, grasping at my sleeves, the hem of my coat. Please, I said, trying to push away from them. Sancta Alina, muttered, whispered, wailed, shouted. My name was strange to me, spoken like a prayer, a foreign incantation to keep away the dark. They crowded around me, closer and closer, jostling to get near, reaching out to feel my hair, my skin. I heard something rip and realized it was the fabric of my coat. Sancta, Sancta Alina. The bodies pressed tighter, pushing and shoving, shouting at each other, each wanting to get nearer. My feet lost contact with the ground. I cried out as a chunk of my hair was ripped from my scalp. They were going to tear me apart. Let them do it, I thought with sudden clarity. It could be over that easily, no more fear. No more responsibility. No more nightmares of broken skiffs or children devoured by the fold. No more visions. I could be free from the collar, from the fetter, from the crushing weight of their hope. Let them do it. I closed my eyes. This would be my ending, They could give me a page in the Istori Sanctia and put a gold halo around my head. Alina the heartsick. Alina the petty. Alina the mad, daughter of Dvastalba, torn to pieces one morning in the shadow of the city walls. They could sell my bones by the side of the road. Someone screamed. I heard an angry shout. Massive hands took hold of me, and I was lifted into the air. I opened my eyes and saw Tolia's grim face. He had me in his arms. Tamar was beside him, palms up, turning in a slow arc. "Stay back," she warned the crowd. I saw some of the pilgrims blink sleepily. A few simply sat down. She was slowing their heart rates, trying to calm them, but there were just too many. A man dove forward. Like a flash, Tamar had drawn her axes. The man bellowed as a red streak bloomed on his arm. "Come closer and you'll lose it," she snapped. The pilgrims' faces were wild. "Let me help," I protested. Tolia ignored me, pushing his way through the crowd. Tamar circled around him, blades in motion, widening the path. The pilgrims groaned and wailed, their arms outstretched, straining toward me. "Now," Tolia said, then louder. "Now!" He bolted. My head banged against his chest as we plunged toward the safety of the city walls, Tamar at our heels. The guards had already seen the turmoil erupting and had started to close the gates. Tolia bulled forward, knocking people from his path, charging through the narrowing gap between the iron doors. Tamar slipped in after us, seconds before the gates clanged shut. On the other side, I heard the thump of bodies pounding against the doors, hands clawing, voices raised in hunger. Still, I heard my name, Sancta Alina. "What the hell were you thinking?" Tolia bellowed as he set me down. "Later," Tamar said curtly. The city guards were glaring at me. "Get her out of here!" one of them yelled angrily. "We'll be lucky if we don't have a full-fledged riot on our hands." The twins had horses waiting. Tamar yanked a blanket from a market stall and threw it around my shoulders. I clutched it to my neck, hiding the collar. She leapt into her saddle, then Tolia tossed me up unceremoniously behind her. We rode in harried silence all the way back to the palace gates. The unrest outside the city walls had not yet spread within, and all we garnered were a few questioning looks. The twins didn't say a word, but I could tell they were furious. They had every right to be. I'd behaved like an idiot, and now I could only hope that the guards below could restore order without resorting to violence. Yet beneath the panic and regret, an idea had entered my mind. I told myself it was nonsense, wishful thinking, but I could not shake it. When we arrived back at the little palace, the twins wanted to escort me straight to the Darkling's rooms, but I refused. "I'm safe now," I said. "There's something I need to do." They insisted on trailing me to the library. It didn't take me long to find what I wanted. I'd been a mapmaker, after all. I tucked the book under my arm and returned to my room with my scowling guards in tow. To my surprise, Mal was waiting in the common room. He was seated at the table, nursing a glass of tea. Mal began. But Tolia had him out of his chair and slammed against the wall before I could even blink. "Where were you?" he snarled into Mal's face. "Tolia!" I shouted in alarm. I tried to pull his hand from around Mal's throat, but it was like trying to bend a steel bar. I turned to Tamar for help, but she stood back, arms crossed, looking just as angry as her brother. Mal made a choking sound. He hadn't changed his clothes from last night. There was stubble on his chin, and the smell of blood and kvass hung on him like a dirty coat.
"Saints, Tolia, would you just put him down?"
For a moment, Tolia looked like he had every intention of crushing the life out of him. But then he relaxed his fingers, and Mal slid down the wall, coughing and gulping air.
"It was your shift," Tolia rumbled, jabbing a finger at Mal's chest. "You should have been with her."
"I'm sorry," Mal rasped, rubbing his throat.
"I must have fallen asleep. I was right next..." You were at the bottom of a bottle, Tolia seethed. I can smell it on you.
I'm sorry, Mal said again, miserably.
Sorry? Tolia's fists flexed. I ought to tear you apart.
You can dismember him later, I said. Right now, I need you to find Nikolai and tell him to meet me in the war room. I'm going to change. I crossed to my room and closed the doors behind me, trying to pull myself together. So far today, I'd nearly died and possibly started a riot. Maybe I could set fire to something before breakfast. I washed my face and changed into my kefta, then hurried to the war room. Mal was waiting there, slumped in a chair, though I hadn't invited him. He'd changed clothes, but he still looked rumpled and red-eyed. There were fresh bruises on his face from the previous night. He glanced up at me as I entered, saying nothing. Would there ever be a time when it didn't hurt to look at him? I set the atlas on the long table and crossed to the ancient map of Ravka that ran the length of the far wall. Of all the maps in the war room, this one was by far the oldest and most beautiful. I trailed my fingers over the raised ridges of the Sikorzoi, the mountains that marked Ravka's southernmost border with the Shu, then followed them down the western foothills. The valley of Dvostolba was too small to be marked on this map. "Do you remember anything?" I asked Mal without looking at him. "From before Keremsin?" Mal hadn't been much older than I was when he came to the orphanage. I still remembered the day he'd arrived. I'd heard another refugee was coming, and I'd hoped it would be a girl for me to play with. Instead, I'd gotten a pudgy, blue-eyed boy who would do anything on a dare. "No." His voice still sounded rough from the near choking he'd received at Tolia's hands. "Nothing? I used to have dreams about a woman with long gold hair and a braid, and she would dangle it in front of me like a toy." "Your mother?"
"Mother, aunt, neighbor. How should I know? Alina. About what happened. Anything else?"
He contemplated me for a long moment, then sighed and said,
"Every time I smell licorice, I remember sitting on a porch with a red-painted chair in front of me. That's it. Everything else."
He trailed off with a shrug. He didn't have to explain. Memories were a luxury meant for other children, not for the Keremsin orphans. "Be grateful. Be grateful."
"Alina," Mal tried again. "What you said about the Darkling..."
But at that moment, Nikolai entered. Despite the early hour, he looked every inch the prince, blonde hair gleaming, boots polished to a high shine. He took in Mal's bruises and stubble, then raised his brows and said,
"Don't suppose anyone's wrong for tea."
He sat down and stretched his long legs out before him. Tolia and Tamar had taken up their posts, but I asked them to close the door and join us. When they were all assembled around the table, I said, "I went among the pilgrims this morning." Nikolai's head snapped up. In an instant, the easygoing prince had vanished.
"I think I must have misheard you."
"I'm fine. She was almost killed," said Tamar. "But I wasn't," I added.
"Are you completely out of your mind?" Nikolai asked. "Those people are fanatics."
He turned on Tamar.
"How could you let her do something like that?"
"I didn't," said Tamar.
"Tell me you didn't go alone," he said to me.
"I didn't go alone."
"She went alone."
"Tamar, shut up. Nikolai, I told you I'm fine." "Only because we got there in time," said Tamar.
"How did you get there?"
Mal asked quietly.
"How did you find her?"
Tolia's face went dark, and he pounded one of his giant fists down on the table.
"We shouldn't have had to find her," he said. "You have the watch."
"Leave it alone, Tolia," I said sharply. "Mal wasn't where he should have been, and I'm perfectly capable of being stupid on my own." I took a breath. Mal looked desolate. Tolia looked like he was about to smash several pieces of furniture. Tamar's face was stony, and Nikolai was about as angry as I'd ever seen him. But at least I had their attention. I pushed the atlas to the center of the table. "There's a name the pilgrims use for me sometimes," I said. "Daughter of Dvastolba."
"Two mills?" said Nikolai.
"A valley, named after the ruins at its mouth." I opened the atlas to the page I had marked. There was a detailed map of the southwestern border. "Mal and I are from somewhere around here," I said, running my finger along the edge of the map. "The settlements stretch all along this area." I turned the page to an illustration of a road leading into a valley studded with towns. On either side of the road stood a slender spindle of rock.
"They don't look like much," grumbled Tolia.
"Exactly," I said. "Those ruins are ancient. Who knows how long they've been there, or what they might have been. The valley is called Two Mills, but maybe they were part of a gatehouse or an aqueduct." I curved my finger across the spindles. "Or an arch." A sudden silence descended over the room. With the arch in the foreground and the mountains in the distance, the ruins looked exactly like the view behind Sankt Ilya in the Astori Sanctia. The only thing missing was the firebird. Nikolai pulled the atlas toward him.
"Are we just seeing what we want to see?"
"Maybe," I admitted. "But it's hard to believe it's a coincidence."
"We'll send scouts," he suggested.
"No," I said. "I want to go."
"If you leave now, everything you've accomplished with the Second Army will be undone." "I'll go. If Vasily can run off to Karjeva to buy ponies, then no one will mind if I take a little hunting trip."
I shook my head. "I have to be the one to kill the firebird."
"We don't even know it's there."
"Why are we even discussing it?" asked Mal.
"We all know it's going to be me."
Tamar and Tolia exchanged an uneasy glance. Nikolai cleared his throat.
"With all due respect, Oretsev, you don't quite seem at your best."
"I'm fine."
"Have you looked in a mirror lately?"
"I think you do that enough for the both of us,"
Mal shot back. Then he scrubbed a hand over his face, looking more weary than ever.
"I'm too tired and too hungover to argue this. I'm the only one who can find the firebird. It has to be me."
"I'm going with you," I said.
"No,"
he said with surprising force.
"I'll hunt it. I'll capture it. I'll bring it back to you. But you're not coming with me."
"It's too risky," I protested. "Even if you caught it, how would you get it back here?"
"Get one of your fabricators to rig something up for me," he said. "This is best for everyone. You get the firebird, and I get free of this saint's forsaken place."
"You can't travel by yourself, you..."
"Then give me Tolia or Tamar. We'll travel faster and draw less attention on our own."
Mal pushed his chair back and stood.
"You figure it out. Make whatever arrangements you want."
He didn't look at me when he said,
"Just tell me when I can leave."
Before I could raise another objection, he was gone. I turned away, fighting to hold back the tears that threatened. Behind me, I heard Nikolai murmuring instructions to the twins as they departed. I studied the map, Politsnaya, where we'd done our military service, Rievost, where we'd begun our journey into the Petrozoy, Zabea, where he'd kissed me for the first time. Nikolai laid his hand on my shoulder. I didn't know whether I wanted to swat it away or turn and fall into his arms. What would he do if I did? Pat my back? Kiss me? Propose?
"It's for the best, Alina."
I laughed bitterly. "Have you ever noticed people only say that when it isn't true?" He dropped his hand.
"He doesn't belong here."
"He belongs with me," I wanted to shout. But I knew it wasn't true. I thought of Mal's bruised face, of him pacing back and forth like a caged animal, of him spitting blood and beckoning to Eskil for more. go on. I thought of him holding me in his arms as we crossed the true sea. The map blurred as my eyes filled with tears.
Let him go, said Nikolai.
Go where? Chasing after some mythical creature that may not even exist? On some impossible quest into mountains crawling with Shu?
Alina, Nikolai said softly, that's what heroes do.
I don't want him to be a hero.
He can't change who he is any more than you can stop being Grisha.
It was an echo of what I'd said only hours ago, but I didn't want to hear it.
You don't care what happens to Mal, I said angrily. You just want to get rid of him.
If I wanted you to fall out of love with Mal, I'd make him stay here. I'd let him keep soaking his troubles in Kvass and acting like a wounded ass. But is this really the life you want for him?
I took a shaky breath. It wasn't. I knew that. Mal was miserable here. He'd been suffering since the moment we arrived, but I had refused to see it. I'd railed at him for wanting me to be something I couldn't, and all the while I'd demanded the same thing from him. I brushed the tears from my cheeks. There was no point to arguing with Nikolai. Mal had been a soldier. He wanted purpose. Here it was, if I would just let him take it. And why not admit it? Even as I protested, there was another voice inside me, a greedy, shameful hunger that demanded completion, that clamored for Mal to go out and find the Firebird, that insisted he bring it back to me, no matter the cost. I'd told Mal that the girl he knew was gone. Better for him to leave before he saw just how true that was. I let my fingers drift over the illustration of Dvas Tholba. Two mills? Or something more? Who could say when there was nothing left but ruins? You know the problem with heroes and saints, Nikolai? I asked, as I closed the book's cover and headed for the door. They always end up dead. Chapter 22 Mal avoided me all afternoon, so I was surprised when he showed up with Tamar to escort me to Nikolai's birthday dinner. I'd assumed he'd get Tolia to take his place. Maybe he was making amends for missing his previous shift. I'd given serious thought to not attending the dinner myself, but there didn't seem to be much point. I couldn't think of a likely excuse, and my absence would just offend the king and queen. I dressed in a light kefta, made of shimmering panels of sheer gold silk. The bodice was set with sapphires of deep summoner's blue that matched the jewels in my hair. Mal's eyes flickered over me as I entered the common room, and it occurred to me that the colors would have suited Zoya better. Then I had to wonder at myself. Gorgeous as she might be, Zoya wasn't the problem. Mal was leaving. I was letting him go. There was no one else to blame for the rift between us. Dinner was held in one of the sumptuous dining rooms of the Grand Palace, a chamber known as the Eagle's Nest, for the massive frieze on its ceiling depicting the crowned double eagle, a scepter in one talon, and a cluster of black arrows, bound by red, blue, and purple ribbons in the other. Its feathers had been wrought in real gold, and I couldn't help but think of the Firebird. The table was crowded with the highest-ranking generals of the First Army and their wives, as well as all the most prominent Lansov uncles, aunts, and cousins. The queen sat at one end of the table, looking like a crumpled flower in pale rose silk. At the opposite end, Vasily sat next to the king, pretending not to notice as his father ogled an officer's young wife. Nikolai held court at center table with me beside him, his charm sparkling as always. He'd asked that no ball be thrown in his honor. It didn't seem fitting with so many refugees going hungry outside the city walls. But it was Belianach, and the king and queen didn't seem able to restrain themselves. The meal consisted of 13 courses, including a whole suckling pig and a life-size gelatin mold cast in the shape of a fawn. When the time came for gifts, Nikolai's father presented him with an enormous egg glazed in pale blue. It opened to reveal an exquisite miniature ship set on a lapis sea. Sturmhahn's red dog banner flew from the ship's mast, and its little cannon fired with a pop that released the tiniest puff of white smoke. Throughout the meal, I listened to the conversation with one ear while I studied Mal. The king's guards were placed at intervals along each wall. I knew Tamar stood somewhere behind me, but Mal was directly across from me, standing at rigid attention, hands behind his back, eyes straight ahead in the blank focus of all anonymous servants. It was like some kind of torture watching him this way. We were just a few feet apart, but it felt like miles. And hadn't that been the way of it since we'd come to Ost-Alta? There was a knot in my chest that seemed to grow tighter every time I glanced at him. He'd shaved and had his hair trimmed. His uniform was neatly pressed. He looked weary and distant, but he looked like Mal again. The nobles raised toasts to Nikolai's health. The generals praised his military leadership and courage. I expected to see Vasily sneer at all the praise being heaped onto his brother, but he looked positively cheery. His face was rosy with wine, and there was what could only be described as a smug smile on his lips. His trip to Karajeva seemed to have left him in a good mood. My eyes flitted back to Mal. I didn't know whether I wanted to cry or stand up and start hurling dishes against the wall. The room felt too warm, and the wound at my shoulder had started to itch and pull again. I had to resist the urge to reach up and scratch it. Great, I thought dismally. Maybe I'll have another hallucination in the middle of the dining room, and the darkling will climb out of the soup tureen. Nikolai bent his head and whispered, I know my company doesn't count for much, but could you at least try? You look like you're about to burst into tears. Sorry, I murmured. I know, he said, and gave my hand a squeeze beneath the table. But that gelatin deer gave its life for your entertainment. I tried to smile, and I did make an effort. I laughed and chatted with the round, red-faced general on my right, and pretended to care as the freckled Lansov boy across from me rambled on about repairs to the dasha he'd inherited. When the flavored ices had been served, Vasily rose to his feet and lifted a glass of champagne.
Brother, he said, it's good to be able to toast your birth this day and to celebrate with you when you have spent so long on other shores. I salute you and drink to your honor, to your health, little brother.
Nays a lost,
chorused the guests, drinking deeply from their glasses and resuming their conversations. But Vasily wasn't finished. He tapped the side of his glass with his fork, producing a loud clink, clink, clink that regained the party's attention.
Today, he said, we have more to celebrate than my brother's noble birth.
If the emphasis weren't enough, Vasily's smirk would have been. Nikolai continued to smile pleasantly.
As you all know, Vasily continued, I have been traveling these last weeks. And no doubt spending, chortled the red-faced general. Have to build yourself a new stable soon, I suspect.
Vasily's glare was icy.
I did not go to Karajeva. Instead, I journeyed north on a mission sanctioned by our dear father.
Beside me, Nikolai went very still.
After long and arduous negotiations, I am pleased to announce that Fyrda has agreed to join us in our fight against the Darkling. They have pledged both troops and resources to our cause.
Can this be?
Asked one of the noblemen. Vasily's chest swelled with pride.
It can. At long last, and through no small effort, our fiercest enemy has become our most powerful ally.
The guests broke out into excited conversation. The king beamed and embraced his eldest son.
Neravka, he shouted, lifting his champagne. Neravka,
sang the guests. I was surprised to see Nikolai frowning. He'd said his brother liked shortcuts, and it seemed Vasily had found one. But it wasn't like Nikolai to let his disappointment or frustration show.
"An extraordinary achievement, brother. I salute you," Nikolai said, lifting his glass. "Dare I ask what they wanted in return for the support?"
"They do drive a hard bargain,"
Vasily said with an indulgent laugh.
"But nothing too onerous. They sought access to our ports in West Ravka and requested our help policing the southern trade routes against Gemini pirates. I imagine you'll be of some assistance with that, brother,"
he said with another warm chuckle.
"They wanted a few of the northern logging roads reopened, and once the Darkling is defeated, they expect the cooperation of the Sun Summoner in our joint efforts to push back the fold."
He grinned broadly at me. I bridled a little at his presumption, but it was an obvious and reasonable request, and even the leader of the Second Army was a subject of the king. I gave what I hoped was a dignified nod.
"Which roads?" asked Nikolai.
Vasily waved his hand dismissively.
"They're somewhere south of Holmhend, west of the permafrost. They're sufficiently defended by the fort at Ulensk, if the Fjerdans get any ideas."
Nikolai stood up, his chair scraping loudly against the parquet floor.
"When did you lift the blockades? How long have the roads been open?"
Vasily shrugged.
"What difference? How long?"
The wound at my shoulder throbbed.
"A little over a week," Vasily said. "Surely you're not concerned that the Fjerdans intend to march on us from Ulensk. The rivers won't freeze for months, and until then..."
"Did you ever stop to consider why they might concern themselves with a logging route?"
Vasily gave a disinterested wave.
"I assume because they're in need of timber," he said. "Or maybe it's sacred to one of their ridiculous wood sprites."
There was a nervous laughter around the table.
"It's defended by a single fort," Nikolai growled. "Because the passage is too narrow to accommodate any real force."
"You are waging an old war, brother. The Darkling doesn't need a battalion of foot soldiers or heavy guns. All he needs are his Grisha and the Nichivoya. We have to evacuate the palace immediately."
"Don't be absurd.
Our one advantage was early warning, and the scouts at those blockades were our first defense. They were our eyes, and you blinded us. The Darkling could be mere miles from us by now."
Vasily shook his head sadly.
"You make yourself ridiculous."
Nikolai slammed his hands down on the table. The dishes jumped with a loud rattle.
"Why isn't the Fjerdan delegation here to share in your glory, to toast this unprecedented alliance?"
"They sent their regrets. They were not able to travel immediately,
They're not here because there's about to be a massacre. Their pact is with the Darkling.
All of our intelligence puts him in the south with the Shu. You think he doesn't have spies? That he doesn't have his own operatives within our network? He laid a trap that any child could recognize, and you walked right into it."
Vasily's face turned purple.
"Nikolai, surely," his mother objected.
"The fort at Ulensk is manned by a full regiment,"
put in one of the generals.
"You see," said Vasily. "This is fear-mongering of the worst kind, and I will not stand for it."
"A regiment against an army of Nichivoya."
"Everyone at that fort is already dead," said Nikolai. "Sacrifice to your pride and stupidity."
Vasily's hand went to his sword hilt.
"You overreach, you little bastard."
The queen gasped. Nikolai released a harsh laugh.
"Yes, call me out, brother. A lot of good it will do. Look around this table," he said. "Every general, every nobleman of high rank, most of the Lantsov line, and the Sun Summoner, all in one place, on one night."
A number of faces at the table went suddenly pale.
"Perhaps,"
said the freckle-faced boy across from me.
We should consider.
No,
said Vasily, his lip trembling.
This is his own petty jealousy. He cannot stand to see me succeed.
The warning bells began to ring, distant at first, down near the city walls, one and then another, joining each other in a rising chorus of alarm that echoed up the streets of Osalta, through the upper town and over the walls of the Grand Palace.
You've handed him Ravka, said Nikolai.
The guests rose, pushing back from the table in a gabble of panic. Mal was at my side immediately, his saber already drawn.
We have to get to the little palace, I said, thinking of the mirrored dishes mounted on the roof. Where's Tamar?
The windows exploded. Glass rained down on us. I threw up my arms to shield my face, and the guests screamed, huddling against each other. The Nichi Voya swarmed into the room on wings of molten shadow, filling the air with the whirring buzz of insects.
"Get the king to safety!"
Nikolai cried, unsheathing his sword and running to his mother's side. The palace guard stood paralyzed, frozen in terror. A shadow lifted the freckled boy from his feet and threw him against the wall. He slid to the ground, his neck broken. I raised my hands, but the room was too crowded for me to risk using the cut. Vasily stood at the table, the king cowering beside him.
"You did this!" he screamed at Nikolai. "You and the witch!"
He lifted his saber high and charged, bellowing with rage. Mal stepped in front of me, raising his sword to block the blow. But before Vasily could bring down his weapon, a Nichi Voya grabbed hold of him and tore his arm from its socket, sword and all. He stood for a moment, swaying, blood pumping from his wound, then dropped to the floor in a lifeless heap. The queen began to shriek hysterically. She shoved forward, trying to reach her son's body, feet slipping in his blood as Nikolai held her back.
"Don't," he pleaded, wrapping his arms around her. "He's gone, Madraya, he's gone."
Another pack of Nichi Voya descended from the windows, clawing their way toward Nikolai and his mother. I had to take a chance. I brought the light down in two blazing arcs, cutting through one monster after another, barely missing one of the generals who crouched cowering on the floor. People were screaming and weeping as the Nichi Voya fell upon them.
"To me!"
Nikolai shouted, herding his mother and father toward the door. We followed with the guards, backing our way into the hall and ran. The Grand Palace had erupted into chaos. Panicked servants and footmen crowded the corridors, some scrambling for the entrance, others barricading themselves into rooms. I heard wailing, the sound of breaking glass. A boom sounded from somewhere outside.
"Let it be the fabricators," I thought desperately.
Mal and I burst from the palace and careened down the marble steps. A screech of twisting metal rent the air. I looked down the white gravel path in time to see the golden gates of the Grand Palace blown off their hinges by a wall of etherealkai wind. The darkling's Grisha streamed onto the grounds in their brightly colored kefta. We pelted down the path toward the little palace. Nikolai and the royal guards trailed behind us, slowed by his frail father. At the entrance to the wooded tunnel, the king bent double, wheezing badly as the queen wept and held tight to his arm.
"I have to get them to the kingfisher," said Nikolai.
"Take the long way around," I said. "The darkling will be headed to the little palace first. He'll be coming for me."
"Alina, if he captures you..."
"Go," I said. "Save them. Save Bagra. I won't leave the Grisha."
"I'll get them out and come back, I promise."
"On your word as a cutthroat and a pirate?" He touched my cheek once, briefly.
"Privateer."
Another explosion rocked the grounds.
"Let's go!"
shouted Mal. As we sprinted into the tunnel, I glanced back and saw Nikolai, silhouetted against the purple twilight. I wondered if I'd ever see him again. The wound at my shoulder burned and throbbed, driving me faster as we raced along the path. My mind was reeling. If they had a chance to seal themselves in the main hall, if they had time to man the guns on the roof, if I can just reach the dishes. All of our plans undone by Vasily's arrogance. I burst into the open, and my slippered feet sent gravel flying as I skidded to a halt. I don't know if it was momentum or the sight before me that drove me to my knees. The little palace was wreathed in seething shadows. They clicked and whirred as they skittered over the walls and swooped down on the roof. There were bodies lying on the steps, bodies crumpled on the ground. The front doors were wide open. The path in front of the steps was littered with shards of broken mirror. Lying on its side was the shattered hulk of one of David's dishes, a girl's body crushed beneath it, her goggles askew. Paja. Two Nichivoya crouched before the dish, gazing at their broken reflections. I released a howl of pure rage and sent a fiery swath of light burning through both of them. It fractured along the edges of the dish as the Nichivoya disappeared. I heard the rattle of gunfire from up on the roof. Someone was still alive. Someone was still fighting. And there was one dish left. It wasn't much, but it was all we had. "This way," said Mal. We tore across the lawn and in through the door that led to the Darkling's chambers. At the base of the stairs, a Nichivoya came shrieking at us from a doorway, knocking me off my feet. Mal slashed at it with his saber. It wavered, then reformed. "Get back!" I yelled. He ducked, and I sent the cut slicing through the shadow soldier. I took the stairs two at a time, my heart pounding, Mal close on my heels. The air was thick with the smell of blood and the bone-shaking clatter of gunfire. As we emerged onto the roof, I heard someone shout, "Away!" We just had time to duck before the Granatki exploded high above us, searing our eyelids with light and leaving our ears ringing. Korporalkai manned Nikolai's guns, sending torrents of bullets into the mass of shadows as fabricators fed them ammunition. The remaining dish was surrounded by armed Grisha, struggling to keep the Nichivoya at bay. David was there, clinging awkwardly to a rifle and trying to hold his ground. I threw the light high in a blazing whip crack that split the sky overhead and bought us a few precious seconds. "David!" David gave two hard blasts on the whistle around his neck. Nadia dropped her goggles, and the Durast manning the dish moved into position. I didn't wait. I lifted my hands and sent light streaming at the dish. The whistle blew. The dish tilted. A single pure beam of light blasted from the mirrored surface. Even without the second dish, it skewered the sky, slashing through the Nichivoya as they burned away to nothing. The beam swept the air in a gleaming arc, dissolving black bodies before it, thinning the horde until we could see the deep Belyanach twilight. A cheer went up from the Grisha at the first sight of stars, and a thin sliver of hope pierced my terror. Then a Nichivoya broke through. It dodged the beam and hurled itself at the dish, rocking it on its moorings. Mal was on the creature in an instant, slashing and cutting. A group of Grisha tried to seize its muscled legs, but the thing shifted and skittered away from them. Then the Nichivoya were descending from all sides. I saw one slip past the beam and dive straight into the back of the dish. The mirror rocked forward. The light faltered, then winked out. "Nadia!" I screamed. She and the Durast leapt from the dish just in time. It toppled on its side in a tremendous crash of breaking glass as the Nichivoya renewed their attack. I threw out arc after arc of light. "Get to the hall!" I cried. "Seal the doors!" The Grisha ran, but they were not fast enough. I heard a shout and saw the brief flash of Fedyor's face as he was lifted from his feet and tossed from the roof. I lay down a bright shower of cover, but the Nichivoya just kept coming. If only we'd had both dishes. If only we'd had a little more time. Mal was suddenly beside me again, rifle in hand. "It's no good," he said. "We have to get out of here." I nodded, and we backed toward the stairs as the sky grew dense with writhing shapes. My foot connected with something soft behind me, and I stumbled. Sergei was huddled against the dome, He held Marie in his arms. She'd been torn open from neck to navel.
"There's no one left,"
he sobbed, tears running down his cheeks.
"There's no one left."
He rocked back and forth, holding Marie tighter. I couldn't bear to look